The Drama of the Week is a download from the BBC.
Headhunters by Michael Eaton. Playwright Michael Eaton introduces his new play about one of the first field anthropologists.
Many years ago, I was a student of social anthropology at the University of Cambridge, and the library there is called the Haddon Library. And outside the library, there's a picture of a distinguished-looking grey-haired chap holding a skull in his hands. But at no time did anybody tell us this was Alfred Court Haddon, the first salaried anthropologist at the university. It was many years later that I realised what a significant figure he was, not least when I saw some of the films that he made in 1898, when he led an anthropological expedition to the Torres Strait Islands that lie between Papua New Guinea and Northern Australia. And in particular, he studied the people of the island of Mare, which is the easternmost of the Torres Strait group. While he was there, he persuaded some of the men who'd become very friendly with to recreate an initiation ceremony that was thought to have been suppressed ever since missionaries came to the islands 20-odd years before, in 1871. And so one short minute of the films that he took is of this recreation of the initiation ceremony, the Malu Bomai ceremony. Haddon was never an armchair anthropologist. He was a world traveller. He liked to get out into the world. And so it interested me to learn that when he was in his 60s, he volunteered to work in the YMCA canteens in the First World War. And these were places where soldiers could go for rest and relaxation. And some of them went right up close to the front line. Haddon spent some time there in what he called the thick of it. Seems a shame to me that Haddon's work has been unjustly neglected. At the time, by far the most famous anthropologist was Sir James George Fraser, the author of The Golden Bough. Fraser was the epitome of the armchair anthropologist. He barely left his study at Trinity College, Cambridge, whereas Haddon went out into the world, went to study and meet people very different from those of his own society, like the people of the Torres Strait Islands, with whom he had an obvious rapport.
Akarene Aitpasi Dikeredi. My name is Aitpasi, Mamus of Dawar, chief of my island. All along, same Queen Victoria. My father was Tsogole, a magic man before the coming of the light, and I am Bezamle of the Shark people. You need anything on our island, you come to me, Dr. Alfred. Wau akamaluet adud leluti adud dereget warbir naukarik leluti warbir derebli bua bua bua.
Headhunters by Michael Eaton, with Michael Maloney as Alfred Court Haddon and Sean Murray as James George Fraser.
The college has sponsored a YMCA hut near the trenches. I volunteered as a worker.
Oh, Papa, at your age...
It's all arranged, Kathleen. You know, look, I attended Fraser's lecture today. Ancient Stories of a Great Flood. Expertly researched, of course. Sir James shared his researches on the comparative dimensions of Noah's Ark with that of the Sumerian Upnapishtim. Oh, look, I owe so much to J.G. He set me on this path. Nevertheless, 3 years into the greatest deluge the world has ever known. Well, I couldn't help questioning the relevance. I have to do my bit.
Your work is here in Cambridge, Father, not on the Western Front.
The university's all but deserted. Most young folk are in uniform. Not just my students, but the junior fellows. Oh. Only chaps around these days are the walking wounded, and those too old to serve, before you say it, such as myself.
What does Mama have to say?
Your dear mother's never objected to my prolonged absences.
You weren't off to war before.
I may need your help persuading her this journey is really necessary.
March the 3rd, 1917. My dearest Kathleen, arrived at the YMCA base camp near Calais tonight in a hail blizzard, the ground thick with snow. Please assure your mother I am far from the front line.
Tell me the old, old story. Tell me the old, old story.
Dr. Allen! Christ!
Oh, yes, yes.
Welcome to the sign of the Red Triangle.
Oh, thank you.
I'm Harold Jasper. Lads call me Jasper the Gasper.
Oh!
One of our duties is to keep them supplied with coffin nails. Right, let's get you settled, shall we?
Oh, thank you. I'm almost with a Gasper myself, I
think. The YMCA huts serve as a club for the soldiers. An indispensable respite. We never sleep. Every sort and condition of Britain passes through these doors. Scallywag and saint, scavenger and savant. You, I presume, are one of the latter.
I hope I'm not a scallywag.
Somewhat basic after the senior common room.
I'm not unaccustomed to roughing it.
Believe me, this is sheer luxury compared with what our boys have to put up with in the trenches.
I'm hoping to witness that myself.
All in good time. Let's see how you get on here first. How about we start you off as a counter-jumper in the canteen?
I'm here to serve.
Life in the huts is a perpetual sacrament of service for we happy hutmen. Believe me. Every volunteer is encouraged to use his God-given talent. Perhaps you might also offer a spot of lecturing. Nothing too highbrow, of course. We don't get so many university chaps.
Well, I did used to give lectures at the Horniman Museum for the Working Man and Woman. Life in a Coral Sea Rock Pool was popular. I'd have to send for my slides.
We do have a magic lantern.
And my talks on magic were always well attended.
We do tricks. That should provide some diversion.
No. I was speaking about magic as a system of belief and practice.
Among the unconverted heathen, word to the wise. We don't tend to lay on our faith with the trowel in the Y. We find the gospel best ladled out with us.
You have personally conversed with magicians.
Yes, I suppose I
have. You have been privileged to witness at first hand the operation of the savage mind.
Actually, Dr. Fraser, I came to consider them as great scientists. Far more well-informed about the world around them than I could ever be. Such knowledge means the difference between life and death for my friends in the Torres Straits.
Your friends? But they practice sorcery.
If a man employs magic when he goes out fishing, it's not because he doesn't know how to fish. The islanders are certainly nobody's fools. Nutsogo Lei would ever make the mistake of using a rain charm in the dry season when there's absolutely no possibility of drumming up wet weather.
Excellent! And entirely confirmatory of my theory in the Golden Bough.
Really?
Do you not find philosophical speculation far more exhilarating than gazing at invertebrate fauna in a rock pool, Haddon?
I must admit, I did become fascinated, yarning with the old men of the islands.
Ah, I'll convert you yet.
I beg your pardon?
I'll make an anthropologist out of you.
I'm a biologist, Dr. Fraser, a humble drudge with a microscope and sketchbook studying the marine life of coral reefs.
Modern-day scientists such as yourselves are standing on the shoulders of primitive magicians.
Really?
Of course. Magic assumes that in nature one event follows another, necessarily and invariably, without intervention of any spiritual agency, just like the modern scientist. The savage sorcerer supplicates no higher power, suing the favour of no fickle and wayward being, abasing himself before no awful deity. The very basis of my hypothesis is that magic is a primitive attempt to coerce the natural world, just like modern science. But there is a difference.
I rather hope so.
The false rules of your magicians are dross. The true rules of we scientists are golden.
Ah.
Religion, of course, is of an entirely different philosophical order.
It is?
Religion is an attempt to propitiate or placate supernatural powers higher than ourselves, agreed? Whereas the fundamental worldview of the modern natural scientist, such as yourself, must have evolved from that of the primitive magician. Ergo, magic is the illegitimate father of science. You are the bastard son of sorcery. You must return to the Torres Straits, Haddon, as an anthropologist. Time is running out.
Busy time tonight, Kathleen. working at the counter, serving cake, biscuits, candles, tobacco and matches.
Oh, another new recruit in the antechamber of hell, and they've already put you on jankers.
It's what I'm here for.
You won't be in base camp for long, I'll bet. They'll be shifting you to one of the huts nearer the trenches soon enough. Well,
so I hope.
They don't let us girls go anywhere near the real horror.
Well, it is the young men.
Christian Association. Quite. I'm Emma, by the way. Oh,
and I'm Alfred.
This is the only way they'll let me do my bit, with a piano and a hymn book. My limited female education has naturally denied me any useful skills. Daddy pulled some strings to get me to France. He's a military chaplain, frightfully evangelical. Sorry, I assume you must be terribly righteous as well.
Well, my father was a Baptist deacon. Ah,
the YMCA huts are well equipped with old nonconformists.
My wife says I'm incapable of conforming to anything, even nonconformity.
What's that you're playing with?
Oh, only a string game. It's a habit of mine, funiculomania.
Is that what you call it? There were girls at school who were always making cat's cradles, never the brightest.
It helps me relax.
I say, perhaps you could give an exhibition for the boys. Fiddling around to no purpose might take their minds off the terrible fate awaiting them when they're marched back to the trenches.
Why not? I shall do my bit with a piece of string.
You see, this little length of twine. There are those amongst you who might dismiss it as insignificant, something to keep in your pocket should your bootlace snap. But believe it or not, this humble substance is of universal importance. No. I've known people, young and old, playing games like this in every distant part of the globe. See, my string allows me to sit down with Red Indian chiefs in their teepees, to walk unscathed among New Guinea cannibals around their campfires, and who could suspect of guile some harmless old white fella with his cat's cradles? Now, here's a figure I learned when I was on Mare Island back in 1889. It's called Headhunters, and it was taught to me by my old chum, Eyot Passy.
And this?
Shrimp.
That's our word, Passy. I want to know what it's called in your language.
In Miriamir, we say meg apu.
Meg apu. And this, the cuttlefish?
Gule.
Now, these creatures,
Gerex.
Sea anemones, actinii, they're the ones I really want to study.
Why? Can't eat them. Never known any white man interested. They only care about eroko, what you call sea slugs.
Or Dolabella scapula, bêche de mer.
And gerret.
Choco shells.
Get a good price in your country, eh? Buttons for your shirts.
I'm not here to buy and sell, my friend.
You like muddy islands, Dr. Alfred?
Oh, I very much. Though I must admit, I came with some trepidation. You people have such a fearsome reputation.
Now we put away bad things.
Why do you say your old customs were bad? Is that how you're told to speak to men like me? Tell me about Marlowe. He was your agud, your god, before the missionaries taught you about Yesu, wasn't he?
Who taught you this secret? Why do you want to know the old, old stories?
Because I think it would be such a terrible shame if your traditional beliefs were forgotten and disappeared forever.
We all Christian fellows now.
You know, Passy, I've come to the conclusion that the benefits of civilization might be somewhat overrated. I mean, what have we brought you apart from the Bible? The twin curses, money and disease.
You are not like any other white man, Alfred.
Then will you share your past with me?
Something soko-soko, secret.
Even though you don't practice them any longer?
Well, that was Emerit Lu. Long time past, before missionaries come.
Tell me, Passy, why did the islanders cut off the heads of enemies? Was it to take their power?
My uncle told me it was all the same as that man in the Bible, the king who cut off the head of John the Baptist.
Oh, Herod.
Sure, he was sorry about it, but it was something that had to be done.
In the old days, I bet my head would have been locked off my shoulders.
Kerem de pieda, one chop.
What would you have done with it?
Any time I have a problem, I'd put it down when I lay sleeping. Skulls send messages in dreams.
Divination. In which case, I might have served you some useful purpose, eh?
Tide's out now. Plenty creatures for you to make pictures of.
If I put both of my thumbs here, like so, and twist them around, like this, then what do you see?
Oh, two loops popping up.
Good. They represent two warriors facing each other. Do you see? This man is from Mare Island, and the other comes from across the reef at Dawa. Now, what happens when I pull on the string?
They're getting nearer.
That's because they're going to fight!
Fight, 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 fight.
Oh, look, one of them has fallen down. The mare man has killed the dower man, and finally, the triumphal warrior cuts off his enemy's head. Right, now, here's an easy one for you to try here. Bar, the fish spear, can you see?
Oh, right. There's the shaft, and there's the point.
Right, let me show you how to do it. First, you put your string around both hands like so. Oops. Dropped it.
Never come across a whiz-bang made of string on your travels, have you, Mr. Alf?
Oh, my goodness.
The lads seem to enjoy your little game.
Oh, it's far more than a pastime, Emma. These simple designs take us to the very heart of what it means to be human.
You're mocking me.
No, certainly not. Ask yourself, Emma, why is it that all over the world people make pictures from sinews of animals they hunt or from vegetation they cultivate? This desire to twist and form twine into shapes resembling something we see around us must date back to...
Don't tell me. The dawn of man.
Exactly. This may well be the very earliest form of art.
Never.
What else is the movement of our fingers to make something from nothing but the human imagination at work?
You mean these cat's cradles convey some terribly symbolic meaning?
I mean they force us to face the greatest riddles of all, to which trials as we might, we'll probably never know the solution.
Which are?
Who are we? Where did we come from?
Now you are having me on.
Not at all. Ask yourself, did games such as these spread over long ages, pass from one tribe to another throughout the globe, or did each separate peoples invent them completely independently for themselves without any outside influence? Now, if we could answer that question, we might untie the Gordian knot and uncover the secret of how we came to be what we are.
I was taught by my father that on the sixth day of creation, God made man out of clay and woman from his rib and put them in a garden.
Then your father would believe this to be a very dangerous question, striking at the very heart of his faith, wouldn't he?
Don't worry, I shan't tell the why you've been peddling heathenish heresies.
Much obliged.
When you go out to the front, you'll need more than a piece of string.
Or a hymn book?
Give us a ham of these cabbages, Uncle!
Of course! Excuse me, Emma. You recall when I first visited you here?
When I tantalized you with the prospect of contributing to our Cinderella site.
No, I protested that to be a proper anthropologist would require far wider knowledge and more versatile talents than I could ever lay claim to. You know, I'd have to possess a knowledge of linguistics, art, music, psychology.
And I counseled you to return to the tourist race.
Exactly. And now the team's almost complete.
God, please! Those packing cases hold a unique and irreplaceable collection of books, not a set of pots and pans. Do excuse me, Haddon. The college authorities have instructed me, gently but firmly, to move out of these rooms. It would seem the weight of my library is causing structural damage. I've been offered a set on the ground floor, much noisier. I'll lose this splendid view over Great Court, and it'll take weeks to put my papers in order. But I have scant reason to cavil. My duties as a Fellow of Trinity are hardly onerous.
As I was saying, I've put together a team, J.G. Willie Rivers took some persuading, but I managed to lure him from the straight and narrow of the hospital wards. He said he could do with a holiday. I'll convert him to anthropology just as you converted me. I'll be doing the anthropometrics, of course, all the skull measurements, and I found a promising chap to conduct the sight and hearing tests, Charles Myers, who's also something of a musician. So we're well represented on the psychological side.
Perhaps too much so. This is, after all, an ethnological expedition.
And that is precisely why I'm here, J.G.
Oh! My armchair! Do be careful!
I came to ask if you want to come along.
Me?
Who else in the whole world is more qualified than yourself to work alongside me collecting the myths and legends, the magic and the folklore?
Far too busy preparing my second edition.
This would offer a unique opportunity for you to practice anthropological research at first hand, in person.
Impossible. I'm at a crucial stage.
But wouldn't empirical fieldwork give even greater weight to your arguments?
Do you consider my theory somehow deficient?
What you might witness with your own eyes could only enrich them.
My eyes are growing dim.
But don't you want to meet those magicians in person?
Certainly not. I'm counting on you, Haddon, to experience the workings of the savage mind on my behalf.
Qui est là avec toi, James?
Viens ici, ma chérie. Let me introduce my Lily, soon to be Madame Fraser.
Well, I'm delighted. Many congratulations.
This is Professor Alfred Haddon.
Professor? And so young. My dear James does not yet possess that rank.
I held a part-time chair in Dublin. In zoology, nothing as exalted as a Cambridge fellowship.
Hello.
Haddon is about to embark on a voyage to a savage island somewhere between Australia and New Guinea, my dear.
Answer me one question. These primitives of yours, do they dance?
They used to, every day and night.
You see, my darling, all the world dances.
My wife-to-be is a recognized expert in that field.
James and I first met when I came to pick his great brain for my researches into primitive dance.
For her forthcoming volume in the Badminton Library of Sports and Pastimes.
Now I understand why J.G. turned me down.
Speak up, please. I am a little hard of hearing.
I came here, ma'am, to ask Dr. Fraser to accompany me on our anthropological expedition to the Torres Straits.
You expect this great scholar to abandon his labours? To leave these hallowed halls for wild haunts beyond the scope of civilization?
Well, I realise now it was a vain hope.
I have great expectations for James George Fraser. My desire is to ensure his work would be widely recognised as truly significant in the coming century.
Really, Lily, please.
Tell me, Professor Haddon, do you intend to study the terpsichorean habits of your natives?
I intend to persuade the old fellows to recreate their sacred dances.
Are they accompanied with song?
Well, they once were.
Before we prayed, we danced. Before we spoke, we sang. Do you not agree? Then permit me to give you a word of advice. You will need a phonograph. It will prove invaluable for recording music. The Edison Bell is best. And what do you propose for the analysis of movement?
I am a reasonably accomplished photographer.
No. The camera, so still, so static, so limited. You must make pictures that move. Do not take my man. Take a cinematograph.
What a very good suggestion, ma'am.
I'm not making straight for you, and you'll see all the wonders of no man's land. This bang, it's you. You all right there, Governor?
Yeah, perfectly.
Dearest Kathleen, motoring along a road between avenues of blasted elms, somewhere in Flanders.
Great difficulty avoiding shell holes and great danger from bombardment as the noise made by the vehicles driving to the front prevents the sound of the shells being heard and thus no cover can be taken should they threaten to drop too close. But please don't worry on my account. I'm in good hands.
As far as I can take you. 11:30 square.
Why is it called that?
See that clock tower up there on the old Hotel de Ville?
Always the same time round here, eh?
You'll have to go on foot now, Squire. Not an easy walk to the up.
I'm sure I can manage. There we go. Thank you very much, driver.
For some bizarre reason, the whine of the shells can't help but remind me of the wind whistling through the rigging. Back in May, 1898.
Aboard the ketch, Freya, skippered by Captain Anderson, bound for Mare.
Lovibond's tintometer. Masson's discs.
Good.
Holmgren's wools. Galton's whistle. Obeck cells.
Good.
Sphygmo manometer.
Yes.
Zvardmarker's olfactometer. Politzer's hormesa.
Oh, remind me, Charles, what's that for?
Testing reaction times to sound.
Oh, of course, yes.
What conclusions do you expect to draw from all these measurements?
My mind is completely open.
Are we expecting to prove the natives are of a different order of reality from us?
All peoples display differences, don't they? Some have curly hair, some straight. Some have dark skin, some light.
And some have big Semitic noses.
No, this is a scientific expedition. There should be no moral dimension to anthropometrics.
As a Jew, I'm rather sensitive to generalizations about racial characteristics. Forgive me. I'll step down from my soapbox.
What I trust you will find really exciting, Charles, is the prospect of recording the old sacred songs before they entirely disappear. Though I fear the people might already be inextricably contaminated by contact with aliens.
Aliens?
How else can we regard ourselves? Now, look, one thing will be impossible to measure.
Which is?
The mischief already done by hasty interference with codes of morals and systems of government which resemble our own not at all. The white man has done native populations few favours wherever the map of the world has been stained with the red of British aggression.
Well, I've never heard our great imperial destiny characterised like that before.
Well, now it's me who should step down from my soapbox.
It's getting rather choppy.
Well, par for the course in the Darnley Deeps, Charles.
I've had a rather cosseted upbringing. I've never been out of Europe before now. Do you really think I'll be up to it, Chief?
I can't pretend it won't be steamy, sometimes oppressively so, but when I was last here a decade ago, I never experienced a day of sickness. Well, hardly. You'll soon get used to the tropical heat, and with any luck, we might avoid the cyclones.
I do hope
Look,
so.
Look, ask yourself, when will you be offered another chance like this? Ours will be the very first anthropological expedition. I intend to study the natives from their point of view, for their sake as much as for our own academic interests.
Wait, secure our kit, comrade!
We're nearing a reef! Deck the control here! All hands on deck!
Oh!
All hands on deck?
Yes, that includes you. Come on, come on!
Is this par for the course as well?
The reefs aren't marked on any chart.
You never told us that. You knew this was what we'd have to endure.
Why do you think I chose Mare as the site for our investigations? It's so darned difficult to get to.
Anchor dragging! All up, every man of you!
We might well be in a grave predicament, Charles. If the Freya hits the reef, it could knock a hole in her bottom.
Oh, wonderful.
I'll try to rest her on the sandbank. I pray God she floats off in the morning's high water.
I might even join him.
No, atheists in tempest, eh?
Lend a hand, Charles!
Look! Murray Islands! Smallest is where? That's Dour, and there's our destination, Mare. Oh, you see how fertile it is. I promise you we won't want for sustenance.
Please, no mention of food. That was the most horrific night.
I've always had complete confidence in Captain Anderson.
Come on, Chief. Last night even you were terrified.
Oh, you see that extinct volcano? The natives call that Gelam. He came to the islands to introduce cultivation in the shape of a dugong. Don't you think the hill is just like a dugong?
I've not the slightest notion of what a dugong looks like, Chief.
Oh, you'll soon be tucking into one, I don't doubt, Charles.
Oh, look, you see those houses on the hill? Now, that's where we'll set up shop. Hand me the binoculars. There are people coming down to the beach. I do believe... Yes! Yes, that's my old chum, Percy the Mamoose, the chief of his island.
Percy! Percy, old friend! Didn't I promise you I'd return one day?
I got a good boat for you, brother, to take you out to the reefs. But it's not going to be big enough. I didn't know you were bringing so many friends.
I haven't come to study sea anemones this time, Passy. We've come to study you, the Meriam people.
Are you going to look at us through your glass?
In a way, I suppose I am.
Still, plenty of stuff below our waves not seen yet.
The reefs and rock pools can wait. They won't go away. You see, my friend, I don't practice zoology any longer. I'm an anthropologist now. I've swapped the study of creatures for the study of man.
Wow, big study.
You remember when I was here before? I asked you about the ceremonies when you were young and the old men made you a member of the Society of Malo?
As soon as hair sprouted on my cheek, my uncle took me into the bush with the other Gersi.
The uninitiated?
Boys who didn't know nothing. Hmm. We learned all that is needed to be a proper man.
Anthropologists call that a rite of passage.
I call it hard lessons, big mysteries. No longer. Hmm. Boys know nothing today.
That's why I want you to share your knowledge with me, brother, to sing me your songs, to tell me your stories.
They scared us. If we let out secrets to any woman or child, they'll kill us.
That was in the old days.
Still, we keep these things close to our hearts.
Do you think you and the other men would make the ceremony again for me?
This is hush, hush, Alfred. Even you should not be told. Bastafina will tell the people. Bassi will have kerosene poured on him and burned in hell forever because he never quit his heathenish ways and does the old soko.
Does he have to know? Couldn't you do the ceremony where no one can see us?
It was at last in the quad, the taboo ground. That's where the Tsogole came out to show us the Agud, our old protectors, who taught us the proper way to live. All overgrown now. Nobody goes there anymore. That's where we learned Malo's laws. No. They're secrets I can never tell.
Wouldn't it be wonderful to see it all again?
No good without the sacred mass. The missionmen burnt our mass when they brought us Yesu.
Couldn't new masks be made?
Only Enoch and Wanu know how. And they're Ecclesia now, men of the church.
Well, you could ask them, couldn't you?
The missionaries preach that Malo is a devil.
You don't believe that, do you, Pastor?
This is the way I worked it out since I last saw you. You people had your Old Testament, wow. Before Yesu came along, there was Mose and his commandments. For us, there was Malo, who came to these islands to give us his laws. Yesu didn't come here to pull down Malo, but to fulfill his mission. Our old God is not the same as your devil. We can have the white man's soko without turning our backs on island custom.
You're right, Passy. I do so agree.
But don't tell Pastor Fino this is what the Mamus thinks.
You know I never would.
Very well. Alfred, you want to know about Malo, wow?
Yes.
Let me have a book like those you always write in.
One of my notebooks?
And a pencil. Passy is going to be an anthropologist like you.
My dearest daughter. Reached Christ's College House in darkness, scrambling over grimy duckboards along a communications trench. Less than half a mile from the front. Fog, mud, rats, vermin, danger. Shells continually falling in this district, in addition to the wearisome reiterated noise of our guns.
Is this one of the traditional songs you want me to record?
It's a hymn, celebrating the coming of the light. They've been taught by the missionaries that Jesus loves us all.
Even me?
We're going to have to dive deep if we want to find the real pearls.
Welcome, Dr. Alfred. Welcome to all your brothers.
Thank you for this warm welcome, my dear friends, old and new. Mr. Bruce, the schoolmaster, told you I was coming back to your wonderful island. But this time, I've come with my friends to find out all about you. Back where we come from, most of us have our homes in big cities with thousands and thousands of other men and women. We've forgotten what it's like to grow food in our gardens or to fish in our seas. So we want very much to find out how you live. One of the things the people back home want to know is whether your way of life means you can see and hear better than the white man, whether you live more naturally, whether we've gone soft. So we're going to ask you to do things for us so we can discover how clever you are. Then we'll put it all down in a big book so anyone who's interested will learn all about the people of the Torres Straits. We're your guests. Will you help us? Oh, well, good. Now, would you like me to show you some pictures I took of you when I was here 10 years ago?
Troops reeking with the filth of battle frequent the hut at all hours of the day and night. We devoted workers toil on. We must be tolerant, sympathetic, and ready to accommodate ourselves to every condition and all sorts of persons. Mud-caked, war-worn soldiers, older than their years, rub shoulders with boys, younger than my students, who are yet to face the terrible reality of the trenches. All are in need of refreshment, bodily and mental. Tonight, we have a cinematographic show. Cowboys and Indians.
Making these measurements almost as much as my subjects do. All these tests, a white man's ceremony. Not true science, but a ritual of science. A complete waste of time.
Oh, come now, Charles.
Hey, my brothers, it's finished.
What's that?
This is Passy's book.
You wrote this yourself, Passy.
Jack Bruce taught me how to read and write at the schoolhouse after the children go home. You told me old knowledge should never die, so I keep it alive in these words. Everything I know I wrote down, in my language and in yours. Not just the stories, but the names of all our villages, the reefs, how we make houses. I start with Malu. This tells how he swam from the west in the shape of a hammerhead, and how he turned into an octopus and landed on the south side of Mare.
That's remarkable. Look, Myers. Now, this is the very first work of literature produced by someone from the islands.
You know, it's good Malo came to us in the shape of Arti.
An octopus?
This creature from our seas has 8 legs. Just like our island is divided into 8 different clans. But the octopus has only 1 head. So, even though our people are different, in the head we are all the same, united.
You, Passy, are the Homer of the Coral Sea. This work is so important.
You know what? I've talked to the men. For you, we're going to dance again. Ulai will sing the Malo songs and Gasu will beat the sacred drum Wasiko. Oh,
thank you, brother.
So I can swap the Hormesa for the phonograph. Oh, thank heaven. It was always useless against the sound of the surf. Passy, will you ask them to allow me to record the songs into my machine? Oh, if only the cinematograph had arrived, we could make the first ever film of an initiation.
You can't make the dance without the masks. But Enoch and Wano say, how are they going to make new masks for you when they don't have the turtle shells?
Might they not use cardboard from our packing cases?
We can ask the school for paints. Yes.
You have to pay Enoch and Wano 10 shillings each in gold.
Certainly.
They give the money to the mission plate. Make it right with God. We'll do the dance like in the old days. Still, one big secret we have to tell.
Friday, June the 15th, after the recent great battle. Traveling on roads, good, bad, indifferent, and all but non-existent. War drains all colour from the landscape, like a moving picture show, except instead of shades of black and white, it's all monotones of mud and clay and khaki. At last, the Y has granted my request to spend some time right in the thick of it.
Good to see you, Alf. They'll let you out of base camp, eh? Welcome to the front.
I'm sweltering.
Keep your tin hat on at all times, would you?
It's so hot I can hardly put my hand on it.
And always have your gas mask at the ready. We're forever on alert. Pretty continuous bombardment day and night here. You get used to the racket. By the way, how are you at quoits?
Well, last time I played was on the deck of a ship shortly after war was declared.
Excellent. We could do with an experienced hand. The Y challenges the RAMC orderlies from the dressing station every week.
Oh-ho-ho.
Jerry permitting. Our side haven't won a game yet. I'm neither use nor ornament with this gammy leg. Everything to play for. The prize is a tin of gold flake.
Come on.
Yes!
Oh, no.
Yes! Oh, yes! Bravo! Right on target, Al. Why wins for once?
Well, a piece of cake without the ocean swell.
That mighty roar of triumph can be heard in the German trenches. They'll think the war's over.
I'll donate these gaspers to our hut. Oh, by the way, where is it?
Over there, in the baby elephant.
What?
See that corrugated iron dugout with the sandbag roof?
Ah, I recognise some resemblance. Poor creature doesn't seem in very good shape.
Hardly surprising. Direct it 9 days ago. I was flogging chocolate to one of the boys who was holding a quid in his hand when... Boom! Bit of a bang on the bonce. Thought I'd bought it. Only one of our dolly cakes from the canteen. the rock, the YM rock. We deal them out to Tommy and to Jock. Though they're granite like and stony, yet we always have a stock. The rock, the YM rock.
No casualties.
Nary a one, thank the Lord. But that pound note's still down there somewhere.
Do we serve in the trenches?
Only as far as the subsits, the reserve trenches. About 100 yards up yonder. I go out every night. Probably best if you stay put. Prefer it if you'd man the soup and cocoa urns and supply us from Jumbo. There's considerable risk, you know, even after dark.
Oh, let me come with you, Jasper. It's what I'm here for.
The hellish orchestra of modern war is constantly playing. Discords of booms, bangs, crashes, rat-tat-tats, whizzes, screechings and whines. But so far I have not felt the slightest fear. The firing of the guns stimulates me like the savage drumbeat.
Try not to spill the cocoa, Alf.
Sorry.
I do hope you're not a sensitive disposition.
Why do you ask?
In this blasted heat, some of the men tend to reduce their clothing, save only for their boots, and recline in the state of Adam before the fall.
Nothing I've not seen before in the tropics.
Tight. Don't leave me, Padre.
I'm with you, son.
Be all
We're
right.
Taking you to the dressing station.
Don't worry.
Is it all right?
Looks like it might be, sonny. I'll be praying for you.
Will he be all right?
He'll live. God willing. Join me in prayer, would you, Alf? Dear Lord, we beseech thee to show mercy on these, your suffering servants, fighting the good fight with all their might, in the name of thy dear Son, our Saviour, Jesus Christ, whose precious blood was shed for us. Amen.
Where's my pal? Where are you, Billy? Where's my head, Billy? I can't find my head.
I stretch your body! Back here! Another wounded man!
He's not injured, Alf. Not physically, anyway.
Shell shock.
Perhaps it's this poor soul we should feel more sorry for.
Oh, Billy, where are you? Where are you, Billy?
On my way back to base camp after my stint in the thick of it, I'm rather in need of refreshment myself, bodily and mental. But it is good to be alive and take however humble a share in these great events. It's you at home who need cheering up, who have to bear the hardships and the long, weary strain of the war. I intend to make a detour to pay a visit to my old comrade, Charles, I should say Major Myers, consulting psychologist of the Royal Army Medical Corps.
If it isn't the Mamoose himself.
Charles.
Good to see you, Chief. Come into my parlour, optimistically called the recovery room.
Well, this sign on your door, Charles. Abandon doubt and fear, all ye that enter here.
A claim I'd never make.
No, it's evidently handwritten by one of your grateful patients. Before, look, this picture of a broken-down, nervy-looking squaddy. After, a sprightly, cheerful chappy.
Would it were that simple. Come in.
So many. Is everyone here suffering from shell shock?
A singularly ill-chosen term.
Oh, I assumed you were the one who coined it.
No, I picked it up from the men themselves originally and purloined it for my articles in The Lancet. Did you read them?
Well,
of course not. Why would you? They were written in the hope that the military authorities might see sense. But I've come to regret the term as hopelessly limiting, harmful even. It doesn't take the physical force or chemical effect of a bursting shell to cause neurosis. These fellows didn't have to be near an exploding shell for this war to make them neurotic. Still, the label caught on. Must be the alliteration, and I'm stuck with it.
It's what the lads at the front are most scared of.
You should never have put yourself through all this exertion, Chief.
Me, I can barely imagine what you must have been through.
It would be unwise and useless to dwell upon what I've had to face. But you look exhausted.
Oh, no.
There's no shortage of others to man the tier.
One cannot help but have enormous respect for the devoted Y volunteers who's sticking it out in intolerable conditions for weeks on end with a can of cocoa in one hand and a New Testament in the other.
Oh, don't tell me they've got you bashing a tambourine and leading the hymn singing.
Oh, no, Charles, you know I have no quarrel with men of faith. Only with those who would force their own beliefs down the throats of others.
Where were you when you heard war was declared?
I was on the other side of the world. I'd been in Melbourne at a meeting of the Association for the Advancement of Science. We were going to return via mayor on the way home. I'd taken my daughter with me. Kathleen was only a tiny baby when I first went to the Torres Straits in 88. I'd promised her she could collect some cat's cradles.
Kathleen was always fiddling with a piece of string. Should I be treating her for funicular mania?
No, it runs in the family, I'm afraid. Well, as it turned out, we never got closer than Thursday Island. While we were there, I had a rather unfortunate run-in with a government resident of His Majesty's Colony of Queensland. We were waiting to hitch a ride to Mare on the Mission Ketch when I was informed our previous sojourn resulted in one heck of a shindy, causing unrest on the island ever since, apparently.
Glad to hear it.
I told him I operate from the principle that if you treat a native like a gentleman, he'll act like a gentleman. And he told me that because we took an interest in his natives, they came to imagine they must be interesting.
Then we must have done some good at least.
As it turned out, the declaration put paid to my best laid plans. Our ship was requisitioned for the war effort. I had hoped to see our old friends again, Passy especially. I always promised him I'd return one day, and now I suppose that'll never happen. What about you?
I was in my lab on Free School Lane when I heard the news. Notating some of the phonographic recordings from our expedition, actually. No reflection on you, Chief, but ethnomusicology suddenly seemed pretty low down on the totem pole.
Are you implying our work is a peacetime indulgence?
All I knew was that I had to get involved somehow. I did my darndest to enlist in the RAMC, thinking my medical background might be put to some practical use. But they turned me down. Too old to enlist, apparently. In 14, I was at the advanced age of 42, beyond the allotted span.
So how did you get your commission?
I took a ferry across the channel and paid a Parisian tailor to make me a British officer's uniform.
What?
The casino at Le Touquet had been requisitioned as a field hospital, so I showed up there and attempted to make myself indispensable. Well, by the time anyone realised I was a complete imposter, I'd managed to pull some strings. My family are not entirely without connections, don't you know? So, despite not a little opposition, I was eventually, if reluctantly, installed in the medical corps. Well,
good for you, Charles.
Ah. But that's where my troubles really began. The prevailing attitude of our enlightened general staff was that anyone who possessed the mental fallibility to collapse under the intolerable pressure of trench warfare deserved to be hung from the wire. Pour encourager les autres. I refused to accept that. In time I made them see sense, see a bloody pressure of numbers. The men who broke down couldn't all be of low moral fibre. Nobody has ever had to deal with neurosis on this scale before. They call you Haddon the Headhunter. Now I've become Myers the Head Shrinker.
I find it remarkable that 4 out of the 7 members of our expedition are treating war casualties. Sliggs Seligman's training medics.
Not quickly enough for my needs. And Willie Rivers is up in Scotland treating officers.
Making a pretty good fist of it, I hear.
Oh, sterling work, no doubt. But a world away from the trenches. He gets poets, I get privates. Willie recommends I should practice psychoanalysis. How long do you think it would take for me to offer the talking cure to all the men in these wards? A couple of hours with each of them is a luxury. Total war produces injury on an industrial scale and demands production line treatment. Willie says the answer lies in the analysis of dreams and tells me I should keep a diary of my own nocturnal reveries. These days I'm too bushwhacked to dream, apart from the occasional nightmare. I'm sorry, Chief. I'm needed on the ward.
Oh, yes, of course.
+2,000 damned souls have passed through these wards in the last few months alone. What with Arras, Messines, Ypres, Passchendaele?
It's completely overwhelming.
Modern war not only tears apart the body, it shatters the psyche. This is literally a war of nerves. Who's to say that in the long run, the greatest casualty might not be the mind?
What can you do for them?
My job is to get them to remember, to persuade them to drag traumatic memories from the unconscious mind and face up to them. There's no possibility of improvement without the return of the repressed.
Wait, please, stop a moment. I know this boy, Charles. Do you know me, lad?
He doesn't know himself.
Why is he shaking so?
Occipital numbness, left-sided hypalgesia, involuntary jerky movements of the arms.
What can you do for him?
I've been treating him with hypnosis.
Hypnosis?
This is not some fairground trickery, you know. No doubt his dreams would provide a royal road to the unconscious, but I don't have the luxury of Dr. Rivers' patent Freudian medicine. I have to take shortcuts. I'm sorry.
Well, far be it from me to question your methods, Charles. Look, I'm Mr. Alf, son, from the YM hut. I saw you in the trenches. Take my hand, Private. Do you want a woodbine?
My head. Where's my head? They took my head where Billy went. Give us back my head, Doc.
Gone again.
Can you ever cure him, Charles?
If I have time.
And if not?
Then he'll be stuck in limbo.
Forever?
Facing the past is the only road to recovery. I owe that valuable lesson entirely to you, Chief.
Me? How so?
You took me to a place where people's traditions have been forcibly taken from them. If that's not trauma, I don't know what is. Didn't you persuade them to sing their old songs? Tell their old tales? Perform their old ceremonies the missionaries had repressed?
Yes, I did.
Well, that was your greatest contribution. To enable them to find a future by recreating their past.
I thought I was collecting data from a world that was already lost.
Nothing's ever lost. We must look back if we would go forward. It's not really so very different, is it?
No, I suppose not.
Lost memories must be restored. You taught me that, Chief.
How do you rate that lad's prospects?
I couldn't do this job if I didn't believe there was every hope of recovery. Another session might well be sufficient.
Oh, thank heavens. And what then?
He'll be sent to rejoin his unit.
When it comes down to it, Chief, my contribution to the war effort has been to save these poor souls from being tied to a stake and shot at dawn by order of court-martial for malingering or cowardice. Only to return them to active service, so they can be shot at whatever time of day or night.
I see.
Might be time to get yourself home, Chief. You've done your bit. Go back to anthropology. It needs you. As far as the wider world's concerned, there's only one practitioner of your craft, and that, amazingly to my mind, is Sir James George Fraser. Honestly, Chief, it pains me how little your work is regarded.
As it happens, I have had a message from the old man. He's asked if he can quote some of my material from our expedition for his book on the belief in immortality and the worship of the dead.
Always was meticulous to a fault in attribution. Or should that be larceny?
He thinks it will bolster his thesis that ideas about the soul have their origin in dreams.
More bloody dreams. If Fraser wants to know something about death, tell him to pay a visit to the Western Front. I see no evidence for immortality out here.
Look, I know you've never had any time for armchair anthropology, Charles, but I'm not so sure Fraser doesn't have something important to say about this war, even if he may not realize it himself.
How could his imagined rambles through the byways of the ancient world have any relevance to what's happening here and now? If he thinks savages are supposed to be pre-logical, then can he tell me what's so logical about this war to end all wars?
Have you ever read what he has to say about the scapegoat? It's part of your own people's culture.
I'm well aware of the rituals of my forefathers.
Fraser writes about how every year on the Day of Atonement, the high priest would take a live goat, lay his hands on its head, and transfer to this domestic animal the sins of the children of Israel. The burden of all the people's guilt, all their pain, all their sorrow was shifted onto this poor creature. Then it was sent away to die in the wilderness. What are these men in your wards but scapegoats?
If I recall, the Golden Bough interprets sacrifice as the way primitive man communicates with and appeases his gods. I ask you, Chief, what terrible wrongs must we have done that we have to propitiate such awful deities day after day here in Flanders Fields by sacrificing our children on such a mass level? Do we need to study ancient society? Or travel to the ends of the earth to come across the horrible belief that the ground needs to be soaked in blood to be fertile? Perhaps we'd be better off returning to the tradition of the killing of the king rather than his subjects. Tell that to your friend Sir James Fraser.
How do you cope with this horror, Charles?
How do you think? I repress it.
The Lancet. Symptoms of War Neuroses by Major Charles Myers, RAMC. Abnormal irritability, headache, giddiness, loss of confidence, loss of concentration, loss of appetite, loss of sleep.
Uncontrolled ear. Manu's hands do not wander. To tear our ear. Feet do not wander from own path. Tag agar kak muyar. Hands touch not to steal. Teter agar kak muyar. Feet walk not to steal. Malo tag tupamait. Tupamait. These are his commandments. These are Malo's laws.
Percy. Is that you, my friend? Why are you here tonight?
How come you never came to see me again?
I truly intended to return to Merp. But you read my book, didn't you? I sent a copy to the schoolhouse.
This book about us made you a big man in your island, Wow.
Hardly.
You call this book Headhunters. Too much humbuggery.
Headhunters, black and white. Because I was also a headhunter, wasn't I? All those days I spent on the beach calibrating cranial measurements.
To show you people got bigger brains?
No, to show we are all the same. Our measurements led to the inevitable conclusion that there's only one race, the human race. That's science.
The traders took our pearl shells. The missionaries took our gods. What did you anthropologists want from us?
To understand what went on inside your heads.
When my people first saw white men, they believed you were Lamar, ghosts from the islands of the west where dead spirits go.
We must have looked so otherworldly, all colour drained from our pale skin.
In your book, you call us savages.
Savage is only a word, a concept.
Sounds to me like an insult.
Not at all. For myself, it means people who live close to the wild.
You calling me a wild man, wow.
I can't help wishing I were more of a savage myself.
You want to be like us?
There was a time, perhaps, when the world was young, when all people lived close to nature, like your ancestors.
Old-time fashion. Back when we were, like you say in your book, primitive.
Now, that's another word you mustn't misunderstand, my brother. It only signifies your technology was not as advanced.
So my people are backward, wow. Not so good as you.
Friendship and affection dissolves inequality. And we've always been friends.
Who was it who stood up against Pastor Finau when he tried to stop us doing the Malur dances for you? When he told the Iglesia to sing, "You must be a lover of the Lord or you won't go to heaven when you die"?
It was you, Pasi. No place for the God of love in missionary mind. For the pastor, the God of wrath was much more powerful.
Who was it persuaded Enoka and Wano to make the masks for the ceremony?
Oh, those wonderful masks. It was you, brother.
Not some childish game. Not some devilish sogo. Not the real thing from the old days, maybe. But they still had power.
Yes, and I soon learned that, to my discredit, when I incautiously showed the masks to a woman who happened to be about the place. Enoka was, to say the least, most put out.
You broke our taboo!
But in doing so, didn't I discover an interesting proof of the sanctity of the originals? No one had been initiated in your ceremonies for a quarter of a century. Your people had all been converted to Christianity, and yet no woman was allowed to see our cardboard-painted models.
Who was it asked Dado and Kirirap to put on those sacred faces? Who was it who told you the greatest secret of all, the holy name?
It was you, Basi.
Maybe I did wrong. Maybe you should not have put that sacred name in your book.
I wanted everybody in the world to know what the white man had taken from you.
After you left all those years ago, we had drought. Long time, no rain. My people said it was your doing.
Me? Why?
Because we gave you our good doyums. The rainmakers couldn't make magic anymore. Where are our rain charms now?
In the museum. At my university.
When someone makes a gift, he must get something in return. What will you give back to us? We lived here long before the white man. Malu brought us our laws long before the Lamar came to tell us we were uncivilized, primitive savages.
I'm not that kind of white fellow.
Your friend, the thin man with the glasses.
Willie Rivers.
He took down the names of our families.
That's what anthropologists call genealogies.
What we told him shows that no one but us owned our gardens for many generations. What we told him proves that this is our land, not Queensland.
No one will ever be able to dispute that.
So, this is what you must give us in exchange for taking our songs and our stories on your sound and picture machines, brother.
Very well.
Vertapagege baobamaletli. Remember what this means.
Stars travel on their own path across the sky.
Malo's law. Never walk on a path not your own. So you tell your people everything about how we live on Mea. But make sure they stay away and don't come and visit us. We've seen too many Lamar.
A splendid idea. Showing the boys what you profs get up to in Cambridge before you leave us.
Yes, I suppose I should get back. I need to be in good working order before Michaelmas term begins.
Your trip to the front was rather taxing.
I don't like to admit it, but my body is somewhat wearied.
Constant standing and serving in stuffy, smoky atmospheres, unappetizing food and wakeful nights. None of us immune.
Never thought the time would come when I should have to lecture against the din and racket of guns in the greatest of all wars.
Scripture exhorts us not to hide our light under a bushel. Yeah. No. You all know our good old counter jumper.
Yes, we do.
Well, tonight he's going to show us some of his pictures from the mission field.
Oh, yeah.
Well, no, not exactly, but from the field, certainly.
Pull down the shades, please, Emma.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Emma. Yes, sir. You know, I took these photographs nearly 20 years ago, before many of you lads were born. But, on Murray Island, far away in the Coral Sea. Now, slides, please. And this is what the people there look like.
Are they cannibals?
No, they were once great warriors, and what they most prized was cutting off the heads of their enemies. Ooh. Well, they called me a headhunter, too, because I took all these photographs of them. But, mind you, in New Guinea, I have shared meals with real cannibals.
What was in the pot, Prof? Missionary.
Well, if so, it tasted better than some of the mints I've been dishing out to you lot in our cottage pies these past few months. But back in 1898, my great aspiration was to make the very first moving pictures of how my friends used to live. But this ambition was thwarted because, frustratingly, my cinematograph only arrived a couple of days before our team were due to leave. So, anyway, the film, please. This is the first time I had a chance to use the motion picture camera. That man on the left is my special comrade, Passy. One of the smartest men I've ever had the privilege to meet. And he asked two of his friends, Mana and Sergeant, to demonstrate how they used to make fire in the traditional manner by rotating a stick. But the film ran out before the first spark. Oh.
Since the arrival of civilization, I suppose they just have to strike a Lucifer.
But the moving picture I really wanted to take was of a ceremony of initiation.
Well, what's that mean?
Becoming the member of a secret society.
Like staff officers?
Well, or YMCAers?
Come, lads. Nothing underhand about wee Coco Wallace. Oh, yeah.
Have the phonograph, please, Emma. Thank you. There we are. Now, most every society conducts very important ceremonies in which lads are formally received into the community of men. Before undergoing these rites of passage, as we call them, the boys have no social position, but subsequently they are recognized as men. They are secluded in the bush in a tabooed spot, access to which is strictly prohibited to any non-initiated person, women, and children. And there they are instructed in the moral code, social customs, and sacred legends of the community. All that it behoves a man to know. Whatever may be done or shown or told has to be kept secret, and by way of emphasizing this, they are frightened and subjected to severe treatment.
Heathens!
Hey, let the man speak!
On Murray Island, this was when the uninitiated were taught the mysteries of Mallow, the supernatural being who brought culture to the island.
An idol of wood and stone.
The old men who had been through these ordeals still did not care to speak freely about the holy rites which were revered in the past. The songs of the Mallow cult were so sacred that no native woman or child might hear them, and no white man had ever heard them before the arrival of the members of our expedition, because the power of this brotherhood had been broken by the missionaries.
How far they had fallen from the divine revelation since the time God made man in his own image.
Sit down!
At the climax of this awesome ceremony, the greatest secret of all is given by the Tsogole, the magic men, to the Kersi, the initiates. And this is the revelation of the true name, the sacred name. For his real name is not, in fact, Mallow, but an unspeakable word which it is not lawful to divulge. Bomai.
False gods.
Yes, exactly.
This chant was taken up. Wow, aka malowet adud leluti adud tereget. Wabir nakarik leluti wabir dereble. Bois, bois, bois. It was only with the greatest difficulty that we succeeded in persuading Ulai from the village of Las to perform these songs for us. Some of these words are so sacred, their meaning has been forgotten. but the words seem to translate as, "Yea, did Malu the bad man his bad teeth?"
Bad teeth? Better see a dentist. It means he's going to eat you.
Wabir hauled me out. The man Wabir dug me out. Bwah, bwah, bwah.
Bwah, bwah, bwah.
Counterwallings of savages before they learn to praise the Lord in joyful psalm.
Oh, amen.
Now, this ritual had not been performed for a quarter of a century and might never have been seen again had we not persuaded them to recreate it.
Idolatry!
The dance was well worth waiting for. Now, I tried to film it, but our machine jammed, the light got in, the stock was spoiled, and I thought my attempt was a total failure.
No! Won't we ever get to see it?
Thank the Lord, no.
Well, I'm glad to say that that is not the end of the story, Emma. Only when I got back to England did I discover that the cinematograph had functioned properly after all.
Oh, that's a good one.
The masked dance had indeed been recorded for posterity, and this is it. If only you could have been there to see the colours, feel the heat, hear the awe-inspiring measured beating of the sacred drum, Wasikor, breaking the solemn silence. Ruddled men emerged from the jungle, wearing the masks. Very weird was this dance in the mottled shade of tropical foliage, a fantasy in red and green, lit by spots of sunshine. At the back comes Killerup, painted all over and clothed with a kilt of croton leaves, bearing on his head and shoulders a long mask representing the hammerhead shark, Mallow. But in front is Gadodo, the principal ritual specialist, the Zogole, also painted red. And on his head, he wears the mask which once would have been bedecked with a beard of human jawbones.
Oh, enough!
The sacred words were uttered, the chant sung, the cursi were told the traditional history, the mythical history of the islanders, and the hidden name was revealed.
This is a Christian building,
yes,
not a pagan shrine.
Exactly.
God is working his purpose out as year succeeds to year. God is working his purpose out, and the time is drawing near. Nearer and nearer draws the time that shall surely be, when the world shall be filled with the glory of God as the waters cover the sea. Yeah! Open the shades, Emma. Let in some light to this darkness.
Get out of here!
A word, please. Am I to understand you deliberately went against the good work of the Missionary Society and encouraged the heathen to return to their pagan ways?
They deserve our sympathy and respect.
Blasphemy!
Paraphernalia of every religion might seem grotesque to the outsider, but they awaken deep sentiments in the true believer who beholds a symbolism that visualizes the sacred legends and aspirations of his community.
Savages!
There cannot be the least doubt that such elevated sentiments exist among so-called savages.
The difference is that our religion is true revelation, whilst others are devilish. Our Saviour exhorted us, "Go ye out into all the world and preach my gospel. Pull down the altars of Baal and Dagon."
Those such as you who scoff at such ceremonies condemn themselves.
I hope you're satisfied, Professor Haddon. You've sowed doubt and uncertainty among men who crave comfort and succour. Had I known you were a dyed-in-the-wool Darwinian, I would have prevailed upon you to remain behind the counter. If this is the heretical blasphemy peddled in the universities these days, then I, for one, am not sorry to be unlettered. You should have stuck with your blessed string.
You can't fool me, Alfred. I understand what you were up to.
I wasn't up to anything.
Oh, no? I used to be so awesomely devout till I came out here. Now I feel such a terrible hypocrite, bashing out pious nonsense from the hymn book every evening service. You've made me wonder whether our old, old story is just one belief among many. You've been around people who sing different hymns to different gods.
Yes, I have.
So what if Christianity is just another primitive cult?
I wish I'd never spoken. There's no doubt belief offers consolation.
Even if it's a lie? Putting your faith in something that doesn't exist. Wouldn't you say that was a delusion? Every religion claims to be the one true faith. They can't all be right, can they? Either only one is the real thing, or they must all be equally wrong. That's logic. Do you really believe these men marching us to war will die but to rise again?
No, I can't believe that, Emma.
That's what their ministers tell them. So what can this faith be but a ghastly confidence trick?
That's not what I was trying to say.
What you did say is that in primitive society, the boys are taken out of their homes to undergo terrible privations, didn't you?
They die symbolically to be reborn as men.
Well, there's nothing symbolic about the way our boys die, is there? Last night you made them realise this is their terrible rite of passage.
Did I?
On your island, all the boys come back as men. But here, the ones who do return seem more like ghosts. And I'll tell you what, Professor, that sacred mystery our lads come face to face with...
The secret that can never be revealed.
I've figured out what it is. The horrible truth the men can never share with their women and children. What they learn in No Man's Land is that this whole deadly ritual is entirely futile. Laying down their lives for God, for king, for country... Completely meaningless. The great lie lives on. And what's the role of us women in this bloody custom? We Y girls stand in for those wives and daughters the boys have left behind. What am I going to do with this terrible knowledge when the boys come home? You weren't talking about them last night, were you? You were talking about us.
A delightful new home, J.G. With a good Scots name, land fine.
Doubt we'll be staying long. Cambridge has never suited Lily. What are you working on, Alfred?
I'm still trawling through the expedition notes, material I've not yet published.
So you're not finally done with your Paradise Islands?
Doubt I shall ever be, not that there's a deal of interest. My ethnographic reports will never be bestsellers, not like your Golden Bough.
Aye, read by everyone. Except anthropologists.
Oh, come now, has anyone's ideas in our field been more pervasive?
Perverted, I'd say.
Oh.
As an instance, T.S. Eliot, some American poet, have you heard of him? Declares himself indebted to my work. Apparently it has affected his generation profoundly.
Which nobody can deny, surely.
That wasteland. Lily tried to read it to me. Totally incomprehensible. This is what passes for poetry these days. Macaulay would be spinning in his grave. And as for the abuse my works received at the hands of... I can barely mention the name. Sigmund Freud. His argument, if such you can call it, seems to be that neurotics behave like savages. Or that children behave like neurotic savages. Or that all of us are neurotic, savage children.
Some of Freud's ideas, well, are they so very dissimilar from your own, J.G.?
What? In his Totem and Taboo, I'm reliably informed this blister postulates the genesis of human culture in a primal horde of ape-men combining to murder their father, who has, by the way, held possession of all the females in the pack, so they can perform coitus on their mothers. Tell me how that degenerate could derive such filth from anything I might have written.
Well, didn't you say somewhere, if I recall, that the smooth surface of society is as thin as an eggshell?
I certainly did write that the ground beneath our feet is sapped and mined and honeycombed with unseen forces, that we are standing on a volcano which may at any moment break out in smoke and fire to spread ruin and devastation upon us.
Sounds very like Freud's unconscious.
I meant we must be on constant guard from savage survivals, not that we should embrace them. I consider myself a prophet of reason, but these modern Johnnies have turned me into a champion of madness. Now I find my thoughts abused by bohemians wallowing in the excesses of their own savage minds.
Can't you understand why the Golden Bough has struck such a chord with those who went through the war? I saw for myself on the Western Front a whole generation made a scapegoat for the sins of their fathers.
That's a complete misrepresentation. I do hope not willful.
More than anyone since Darwin, you have shaken the foundations of the simple faith of our fathers.
Nonsense!
You can't have it both ways, J.G. Surely you must have realised the implication of your work on the mystery religions of the ancient Near East, the cults of Attis, Adonis and Osiris.
All sacrificed to ensure the continuation of nature. Rising from the dead to ensure eternal life for their adherents.
Exactly. You planted the seed in the minds of anyone with a grain of sense that these pagan deities might not be so very different from the crucified Saviour.
Some might wish to force such a parallel. It was never my intention.
But surely it had that effect. You have exposed that the blessed assurance of salvation we were both promised as children is just another myth.
How can I put this, Alfred? The early church at Rome celebrated Easter at the spring equinox, which they reckoned as the 25th of March. This happened to be the very same date on which the death and resurrection of Attis was celebrated by his heathen followers, who called it the Day of Blood. Those solemn rites even included effigies of their dead god tied to a tree. So these pagans, perhaps not surprisingly, objected that the upstart deity Jesus must be a spurious imitation of their own god, Attis, whom they had been worshipping for centuries. But the Christians had an ingenious answer to this apparently logical contention. They asserted, with equal force, that Attis was merely a diabolical counterfeit of Christ. The worshippers of Attis took what, to a superficial observer, might seem strong ground. They argued their god was the older and therefore the original. However, the Christians easily rebutted this feeble argument, at least to their own satisfaction, for they maintained this was nothing less than a subtle ruse of Satan, who surpassed himself by ingeniously inverting the usual order of time.
Splendid. You see, like it or not, Sir James George Fraser has become a champion of free thinking.
Perish the thought. Nothing could ever be sufficient to shake the faith of a believer. Why would I wish to?
Do you still attend?
Aye. Every Sabbath.
So do we. My students have always found it something of a contradiction. My justification, which I grant is somewhat specious, is that religion is less a question of theology than of sociology. More about action than belief. Mind you, I doubt I'd go to chapel if it weren't for my wife.
Must we conclude that the mass of mankind remains savage?
A word I try to expunge from my vocabulary, and one which you might not be so confident using had you accepted my offer to come to the Torres Straits.
God forbid! When I was a child, my nursemaid took me to a fair on Glasgow Green. In one of the tents was exhibited a vile, hirsute simian creature, rattling the bars of his cage. The wild man of Borneo.
A showman in a monkey suit.
Nevertheless, I howled with terror. I ran from the tent, bawling my eyes out and begging to be taken home to safety. Not that I have any personal recollection of the occasion. My father told me when he learned I was, as he saw it, abandoning the classics for darker gods. A cautionary tale.
Oh, you might have found savages far less fearsome in reality. It's the civilized the world has most cause to fear.
I used to put my faith in intellectual evolution. Now I have come to the pessimistic conclusion that scientific progress is the avowed creed of merely an enlightened minority.
Does scientific progress mean there'll never be another war?
Ah, tea. Thank you, my dear.
And Mrs. Haddon's seed cake.
Oh, well. Oh, goodness.
Forgives the damnable cacophony which surrounds me, Professor. My electric deaf aid.
Please don't mention it, Lady Lily. You remember my daughter, Kathleen, J.G.?
Of course.
Good day, Sir James.
You wrote a delightful monograph on Cat's Cradle.
She's been demonstrating some of her games for me.
Oh, would you show me, please?
Certainly.
You'll have to come closer so I can see.
Right, what shall I do? Ah, this is an interesting figure. Papa Lenton Mare. It's called Will You Have a Yam? Can you see what I'm doing?
Holding a loop of string between your thumb and finger.
To the Murray Islanders, this represents one of the staples of life. Lure.
Is that so?
I say, you want some yam? Then you have to say, you got food for me? Go on, Sir James.
You got food for me?
A subtle twist. Oh, and the yam disappears. You know got food.
A delightful pasta.
Oh, it is far more than that, Lily. My interpretation would be that this is a survival of sympathetic magic to promote the growth and harvest of the yam crop.
Really? I never saw it in that light.
It entirely fits my overriding theory.
Naturally. Yeah.
Who could ever stop this great mind from working? Oh.
Lady Lily, there are two reasons for which I will forever be in your debt. The phonograph and the cinematograph.
Hmm? What's that?
The ear... and the eye.
Have we sown on stony ground, Alfred?
The study of mankind? How people go about in their world? Their hunting, their gathering, their fishing, their gardening, their living, their loving, their dying, their believing? What could be more important?
That creature Freud might well be correct in one regard. Each generation has to slay their fathers.
Now look, you've exhausted him, Professor Haddon. Please, would you mind drinking your teas and leave us?
Oh, yes, of course.
Time for your rest, James.
Goodbye, J.G.
Goodbye, Sir James.
Wau aka maluet adud le luti adud dereget warbir naukarik le luti warbir derebli bua bua bua.
In Headhunters by Michael Eaton, Alfred Court Haddon was played by Michael Maloney, James George Fraser by Sean Murray, and Charles Myers by David Seddon. Passy was played by Sani Muli Amase Ali'i, Jasper by John Norton, Emma by Georgie Fuller, Kathleen Haddon by Karis Aleri, and Lily Fraser by Priyanga Burford. The soldiers were played by Arthur Hughes, Harry Jardine, and Joel McCormack. The director was Jeremy Mortimer.
If you'd like to receive our newsletter with full details of the week's radio dramas, just search for BBC Radio Drama Newsletter.